The Athlete CEO Podcast. Let's go.
Hey.
Yo.
All right. What is happening?
Kia ora, bro. How you doing?
Good, brother. Kia ora, bro. It's firstly, just want to say it's a huge privilege and an honor to have you here on Success Story Conversations, man. I really do appreciate it. Giving up your time. For having a chat.
Yeah, look, more than happy to be here, bro. So, look, thank you for having me. Glad to be on board.
Cool. So just quickly, first up, if you just want to share a quick 60-second bio just for our viewers and listeners who may not sort of know who you are and what you do. So I'll hand it over to you.
Yeah, bro. Look, thank you. My background initially started off as a personal trainer. And most recently, I'll give you the highlight reel. We opened a gym in Central Otago. We made a couple hundred K in 14 days off a $200 marketing budget. And from there, that's led me to sort of quite a few, what could I say, quite cool events. We partner and I partner with another guy, Jonathan Maxim, in the States, and we run a thing that is called K&J Growth. And so that's pretty much what we do at the moment.
Yeah. No, awesome, man. Awesome. Cheers for that. Just speaking about K&J Growth, can you just share a bit about sort of what that business entails? You know, I know it's a bit around growth hacking, but for our viewers that may not be aware of that, just sort of share a bit of the services that you provide with that.
Yeah, so I think growth hacking, a term in itself, probably got relatively popularized when I look back about sort of 6 to 7 years ago, right? And so when people think of that term, and like for lay people, essentially, it means taking like a really small budget and then turning that into something really big or viral or massive and going from there. So generally, in terms of what that is and what we do, we sort of do that in a digital sense at K&J Growth. And with digital marketing, it's sort of in that area now where you can, what can I say, probably take things when they would have been relatively hard to do in a physical marketing sense. But in a digital space, you can make things go viral. Terms like that where you can obviously get people to buy in, get a lot of response, and you can do it for a really, really small budget. And so in terms of what we do, we help quite a large number of companies, from Fortune 15 companies through to mom and dad startup through to pretty much what we did with our own gym as well.
And these are companies all over the world. Is that not just in New Zealand and Australia, but I jumped on your website and I saw that you worked with Delaware University and a few startup companies as well.
That's right. So we've been pretty lucky with the scope, the type of work we've been able to do. So a big one that we've been able to sort of work alongside was Comcast, which is they own Universal, so pretty big companies, right down through to, like, hey, Kale, one of my mates down at the gym, he's like, I need a website. Can you help us do that? So we range in terms of what we do. And usually what the sort of marketing tactics we run on is we run from sort of 3 to 6 months periods where we're doing websites through to digital marketing funnels and everything around that.
Yeah. No, awesome, awesome. So I'll just share a quick story around how I came onto you and following you, which was almost over a year ago, was my best friend. Had said, bro, you need to check out this dude. He's from Dunedin. And I was like, hey? And he was like, so I started following you on social media, and then it was that article that you wrote for Influensive, which is the one I'm going to get you to sort of touch on now. That really sort of blew my mind. And, you know, obviously the title, you know, $200 marketing budget into over $200,000 in annual revenue in 14 days. So I actually shared that. I shared that on my social media platforms as well. But can you just give us a brief sort of the backstory and then how that came about?
Yeah, look, so I think there's two things I want to put forward when I say that, because a lot of the times when people retell or share stories or these types of things is that they'll take a lot of the highlight reel, and in the retelling, there's a little bit. One, the first is a little bit of luck. I was in the right place at the right time. And then the second part too was a good marketplace to be in. But I'll start from the beginning and sort of tell you how we got there. So I was going out for coffee with my my cousin and his partner, and we were just literally sitting there, and they're like, hey, we think we might be able to open a gym in Cromwell. And so this is Central Otago, Cromwell. We'd love to do it, see what it would look like. And they were like, oh, you know, we want to find out for work. There's two other gyms there. Do you think we could do it? And I was like, look, maybe. How much money have we got to spend? And we're like, maybe $100. And I was like, oh, yeah, I could put $100 in. And so we started with this idea of like saying, okay, cool. Well, look, we know a gym's going to cost at least 50 to 70K to open, right? Yeah. And what most people will do, and the biggest issue that when people go into marketing, any type of idea, is they'll buy first, then try and sell. And the biggest issue that I've always seen, and the biggest part, is, well, how do you know anyone's going to buy what you're selling, right?
Yeah.
And so what we did is we said, okay, cool. Well, basically, a gym is a physical product, but people still pick and choose what types of classes they want. They pick and choose what type of trainers are involved. They pick and choose the equipment, and they choose what it looks like, right? And like most great products or anything that works, it's revolved around a community. And so we were really lucky at that point in time. We said, okay, cool. We know we can probably drive a community because we've got a lot of good people around us. We know what the market wants. And so we started by going backwards and saying, cool, we've got $200, but what if we said, let's find a venue, let's get something that we can do, and let's literally try and sell the memberships before people even walk in the door and sell a concept. Yeah. And so essentially across that sort of that 14-day period, what we did is we gathered sort of the most social people in our community that we knew. And then what we said, hey, is like, cool, guys, this is what we need to do. We want to open a gym. How many friends have you got on Facebook? Excellent. Cool. We're going to create an event. And what we're going to do is we're going to get a venue, which we sort of called a landlord up, negotiated, and be like, hey, if you let us use this venue, we might hire it from you, but I don't know if it'll work. And this landlord, though, he was like, yeah, cool. All right. He's like, we would probably look at a 4-year contract. And we're like, yep, hopefully we can get any person to walk in the door. And then I guess from there, what we did is the big part is we got the community on board, right? So we knew the people who loved exercise, fitness, and they also got them to share with us pretty much what they want in their ideal gym.
Yeah.
And I guess when you've got a community of people who want or want to action something, the power of their words is that they all have no like and trust factor, right? The reason people are watching this now, the reason people are watching me and you chat, is because they know us, like us, and trust us.
Yeah.
And we did the same thing with the gym. We said, we've got 14 days, $200. Let's buy some A4 and A3 pinups of equipment, ask people exactly what they want in the gym, and then get the people we care about to actually share that content with our community. And from there, that was it, really. It's a very simple version of pretty much what we did. But if you break it down, it came down to other people having a very, very strong network of community of people, being able to share our voice and our message. And that led to, obviously, that many people sign out. We had 205 people walk through the, well, 205 people sign up, and maybe 300 people come across these events across 2 weekends. So,
wow,
pre-sold these memberships. But like I said, it was based around, one, that concept of growth hacking.
Yeah.
And I think that second part too of, you know, no like and trust factor, and then multiplying that from other people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you said, so you, man, that's crazy, because you said you had, over the 2 days, you had 300 people come across and you signed up 205.
That's right.
Is that right? What a sales conversion.
That's true. 66% hit rate.
Straight away for, you know, first up, which is awesome. I'm going to touch on something that, that you brought up, and something that I've learned is this concept around sell then build, and in relation to programs and trainings and stuff, you know. And I've seen it. I've been a victim of it, trying to build a product or a program, get it all the way. You've put all this time and effort into it, and then no one buys.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, whereas you sell the concept, and if you get enough interest, then you can build, which is almost sort of what you did. And so is that gym still going at the moment?
Yeah, 100%. So Johnny and Alex, they run it. They're up in Cromwell. Just hang out with them on the weekend. So they were actually with us with my brother on my engagement party. So gym's going well. It's sort of, I think, early 300s, low to 90s type numbers at the moment. So up and running for now just over 2 years. Well, close to 2 years now.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. What a great story. That was, and I guess that was the catalyst into you making that leap into what you do now with K&J Growth Hackers.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think that part where you touch on is a lot of people build then sell, right? And so the whole concept around growth hacking and growth marketing is finding that thing that people call that their product market fit, or the minimum viable product, which most people would have heard of, or that term is relatively used well in business. But what that means is it's like, okay, what is the littlest, smallest amount of stuff that you can sell and then get, you know, people to buy into it? And so for us, that was a lot of obviously the gym stuff, right? We got people who were lucky enough to buy into a concept of what could be, and then we built it. So I think most great marketing probably revolves around that type of concept. If you don't have a good budget, right? If you've got great budget and you've already got an awesome marketing team and you've got an amazing product, you should always start with the bare minimum and keep scaling and scaling up and improving. But for us, when we had $200 and, you know, full-time jobs, it made sense for us to, you know, say, okay, cool, look, we've got 14 days. We know if we don't do it within that time frame, we're never going to commit to it. So we put those barriers and timelines up and then executed from there.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. Mm. And I think I've read that article about 20 times. So I just read it just before. It never gets old. So if you're watching, I'll post a link after this of that article so you can have a read for yourself as well. So I guess where we're going now is for you to just share your story. If you want to just take us back and walk us through, I guess, your journey all the way to, I guess, the moment when you started the gym.
Yeah, cool. So jumping back, I'd just been previously in uni. I've been doing a diploma in PT, been studying at the University of Otago, took a break and a gap year to work in a startup called Education Perfect. Worked alongside some couple of good mates. They recruited me. They said, hey, cool, come join our startup. It'll be awesome. You'll love it. Take a couple of years out. It's going to be in marketing sales. And I was like, ah, cool. I'd worked at Harvey Norman. I'd been used to people saying no to me and being told to go away when trying to sell them computers. And so learning that point from there to jumping into selling basically software as a service, so SaaS stuff, and they were EdTech. Did that for 2 years and then moved into this into another role here locally. Went through, and this is pretty much the transition point for me, and what I think the big part was, is I did I won't name the company, but basically I was there with a 90-day trial. End of the 90-day, before even probably 90-day trial, they're like, hey, look, you're not what we want. You pretty much came in, one day at the office, like, your stuff's in the box, you're going. So essentially it's like, oh, shit, you're gone. You're fired. Yeah. And it's a nice way of saying, when people are saying, obviously, cool, you didn't make your 90-day trial, but obviously it's a nice way to not get get fired, right?
Yeah.
And so at this point in time, most of the stuff I've been doing lifestyle-wise was relatively like linear. I've been doing the right stuff, education, good job, good pay, and then hit a brick wall. And that point in time for me, I was like, wow, okay, cool. Like, I've really got to assess what the key components are of what's making me tick, what made this company who had reached out to hire me in the first place, I've been recruited, not keep me on after a 90-day role, right? And so the key thing for me was like, okay, well, look, where do I go now? I'm pretty much at the bottom of sort of failure. I had never sort of experienced being that low in my life. after sort of being in such a sort of successful path. And a lot of it, I think, when I go back, is I had to take a big amount of self-reflection. And the key thing that most of it is I was relatively egotistical, narcissistic. Yeah. And the other thing, I was blaming other people, right, for the majority of what I found was going on around me. Yeah. When I came back home that day, I was talking to Leah, my partner, and I was gutted. I was broken from it. And the thing from that point there, as I said, okay, cool. What is it that makes me be frustrated about this or want to do better? And very, very luckily that I think probably as an ego-driven decision was like, I've got to do better, right? And at the time it was, okay, what does better look like? And I was very lucky enough to talk to the person who had let go, and he said, look, it was on you. You know, he said, your attitude, you thought you were too good, and that sort of had, we had to let you go. Your skills were great, but we can't have someone like that work within a team. And that was very hard to swallow. That failure from that moment was a large, large pivot point for me. I came across a couple of books. The first is The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday.
Yeah.
The second was Ego is the Enemy, also by the same author. Both were relatively pivotal turning points in terms of saying, okay, cool. A lot of what I was doing was about making Kale good, making Kale better, doing the things for me, as opposed to flipping that and saying, cool, well, look, how can I make other people better and around me, right? And as much as I'd like to say I've dropped as much as a lot of my ego, still there, but a lot of that process came around about self-awareness, being better for other people. And the other part too was understanding empathy and things. I was terrible. Like, I couldn't really picture why other people would struggle with stuff. I would be like, hey, go do this. And then they come back and be like, I don't know how to do it. And I'd be like, that's not my problem. Why hasn't it been done? Right. And even saying that to you now, it's like, that guy sounds like a dick. But I think when you reflect on those types of things, that was that pivotal point. So what I grew through that there, that led to that one of, okay, cool. I know I've got some skills. I can probably look at what I'm good at, what I'm assessing at, and what I can actually do to improve. And the big part was opening the gym, right? And so from there, once I opened the gym and published that article in Influencer, that's when things went sort of crazy. I got press in Inc. magazine, Huffington Post, Forbes, and I started to be able to pursue a whole lot of different ideas around learning rapidly, right? Or in that self-improvement space. So reading books on one, stuff like How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, anything to do with marketing, anything to do with any form of self-improvement.
Yep.
And then a lot of it was self-awareness, like asking people, what can I do better? Who can I be around? And the last part was becoming like the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So being around people who were a bit better than me and then consistently leveling up in that respect, right? Yeah. And so from there, that was the point when it was like, okay, cool. I end up getting work contracted, sort of international people reaching out saying, can you help us do this? Can you do growth marketing for us here? Can you do growth hacking in this? And finally led me to compete on a contract with a mate. And this person, he and I both went in on this contract for University of Delaware. Yeah. And the person I lost the contract. And I ended up connecting with the guy who I lost the contract to, and we chatted afterwards. And in previous times, I probably would have been like pissed off, annoyed that they hadn't taken my work.
Yeah.
Instead, I reached out, spoke to the guy who'd got it. Turns out the guy was John, and he's the other half of K&J. And so from there, he and I worked as a team to create the company that we have now. We've got a team of six, and I think the key part of it for us is being able to sort of self-aware grow, but also work around this concept too of that sort of growth marketing, because at the moment, still marketing, some people are doing it relatively traditionally, but not a whole amount of it is what it is today. So I think that's a huge part of me, is changing that and getting that self-awareness.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And thanks heaps for sharing that. I guess one of the things that I find common with the guests that I have on is that there's a moment, or I like to call it a defining moment, that they share, that's almost that turns the switch on. And for you, there was that moment where I guess, you know, you got let go of your jobs, never happened to you. You've done everything linear. And then all of a sudden, you're jobless. So, and you know what? It's I believe it's in moments like that that we really reflect and find out who we really are, what we're made of.
Mm.
And you shared that, which was the biggest thing I got out of that that story there. And but if I was to ask you, if you could really pinpoint, if you could take yourself back to that point, and you said that, yeah, what brought upon this self awareness? Was it the what was the actual light switch for you that made you make that change?
Yeah, well, I think the key part for when I made the switch and probably made that change and transition is that if your performance is good at something and you're still getting people around you who are reacting and saying you're a dick, then most of the time it's got to be you and not them.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it was being able to crowdsource collectively, okay, cool, what is it that I was doing wrong? And realizing then very quickly is that, okay, cool, it's actually not the 10 people around you who are all wrong. It's actually probably you, because if the consensus of agreement is that you're not doing great and that you're letting other people down, then there's a high chance that you've got a self-awareness point. And so that was the big part for me, was that when I chatted with the person, they said, hey, look, what you're doing is not right, and this is the way that you made other people feel. And I think there, when some of the comments that came up were around that, that for me was like, okay, cool, that's me, that's no one else, you know what I mean, that's purely on you. And as much as that point is you're wanting to willing to be able to deny it, make excuses for your behavior, when you get a collective of people like that, that's when it switches around. And I think that's the big transition for me there.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Thanks a lot again for sharing that, because one of the things that you're probably aware of, the term is, you know, above and below the line. And really, that's one of the models that I use to assess my way of thinking. So depending on sort of the situation, the circumstance, and then I'll just take the time to reflect and like, am I blaming others? Okay, I'm below the line. Why am I blaming others? Or do you know what I mean? Like,
100%.
Obviously. And being able, and the more that we can be above the line in our thinking, the more I believe that we'll start to grow. When you're below the line thinking, you don't search for answers. All you do is blame, make excuses. Yeah, that's right. And when you're above the line, you know, you take accountability, ownership, and responsibility for your results and your actions. So, which is something that I got away from you sharing that as well. So, I guess what we'll do now is we'll start to sort of just lighten it up a bit. And I'll ask you a few questions before I open it up to the people watching, who I'm pretty sure are very eager to ask you some questions. So these are just a couple of questions, and some of them, feel free to answer any way you please. So the first one is, if you could be mentored by one person, who would it be and why?
Yeah, so recently for me, this has been a transition, I think Seth Godin. I don't know that he's not particularly well known outside of the marketing world, but he's a person who is a lot around about positive impact through relationship. And he's a very, very well known marketer, but only probably with people within the marketing world. And his impact and his work has been really, really high level for me in terms of what that means and what that looks like. And I've found him to be like an incredible mentor in terms of the work that he does.
Yeah. Awesome. What's your favorite quote?
The big one for me is, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And so I think that's by Jim Rohn, but that really sums up a lot of, if you're spending time with people who are going to keep you below the line, then that's where you'll stay. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if you've got people around you who are consistently looking to be better, they're not spending time, you know, they're not wasting time, but they're actually living. That type of stuff is the things that pulls you back up. And I think it mirrors true for pretty much most aspects of your life. You know what I mean? How you spend your time, what you're doing, it always pulls you back up. So if the people around you are good, it'll bring you right up.
For sure. I love that quote. I always use it when I speak to young people, to youth. You know, I work a lot with disengaged youth, and whenever I get the chance to share and present to them, I always drop that quote.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I'll drop it and then I'll pause for like, you know, 10 seconds, because you start to see the youth, they'll be like, they'll start to see who the five people they hang out with. You can see them counting.
Kids, they're sitting beside, isn't it?
They just start counting. They're like, oh. So I love that quote, and I've always been a big fan of Jim Rohn as well. So awesome. Success. Mm. What does success mean to you? What is success to Kale?
Yeah. When I was reading, you sent through the questions earlier, and I had to sit down and think about it. And
yeah,
I think I the things that came to me was, when I think of success, it's the willingness to be objective, fail upwards, and I think surround yourself with people who will make you better and that will make you want to grow. Because I think ultimately those are the sort of three key things that we face pretty much every day. And if you find a good balance of those things, you generally will just go in an upwards direction. I think that's what success usually is.
Yep. No, that's awesome. So what we'll do now, we'll open it up to any viewers, all our viewers that are watching. If you have any questions for Kale, now would be the time. I've got a few. Here's a comment from Paul Perez. He's a magician, mate. So there's a few people that have read your article. Nick, it's a really good article, jam-packed with some great points. If you haven't already read it, highly recommend.
Yeah, I can see a few. I've got a few of the fun. A few other people are watching. It's quite cool.
Oh, awesome! Hey, Jade, I see you jumped on.
I think Danny's still here. Russell, Tim, Corey, Veronica. Yeah, cool.
Awesome. All right, here we go. Paul Perez, your three favorite books.
Yep, I can list them off the top of my head. So, 4-Hour Work Week's a really big one by Tim Ferriss. I think that taught me how to manage my time and effectively, I guess, schedule and learn how to sort of live a lifestyle where you can pretty much, you can have work, but you can also do what you like on the other side. The second book is The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. And like I discussed earlier, I think a lot of that one there is about objectivity and turning things that most of us would usually blame or struggle with, and flip that back around to turning failures probably into successes. And then the third book, which has recently sort of crept right up for me, is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Yep.
I don't know if you've read it, but...
No, I haven't. But one of the other guests, he's read it.
Wow, okay.
He dropped that book as well.
Yeah. So I think that was a pretty incredible book for me in the respect that... I was pretty binary in the way that I think in decision making, and I've been very lucky to. that's a good question. The one that's just coming, but I think I was relatively binary in the way that I used to think and feel, and I'm very lucky to be able to work alongside some pretty cool people now who've helped me out with that. Sarah Hill's a really good influence of persons and some team at the SEER, but the way that book works is it basically teaches you how to care about people and also influence and watch those actions and communicate effectively.
Yeah. No, awesome. And I've been meaning to get Ryan Holiday's book, The Obstacle is the Way. I saw a lot of the press around it, especially on social media when he dropped it, and I actually watched this video where he spoke about it. So, which is incredible, an awesome book, right? Video. Yeah. So just before we get this question from Nick, one question that's popped up is when you spoke about you've always been, I guess, linear in your way of living. I guess, you know, you got the good education, you got the good job. How did you break out of that linear type, or was it that moment where from the job to, and then did you know you always had this creativeness or what you had inside of you to do what you're doing now? Just for people that may be watching who are in that same sort of, you know, linear type way of living.
So there's two things. Childhood wise sort of relatively, maybe a single mother, drank a little bit, so adverse outcomes when I'm a bit younger. And then I think the second part for winning doing that too is that I was surrounded by people who were doing sort of linear stuff. And I have a big thank you to give to some people who I surrounded myself with that sort of changed my thinking. I had a flatmate, George Gray, who he was a bit of a turning point. He read the 4-Hour Workweek, the 4-Hour Body. And the introductions and the things that he was doing was what broke me out of that mindset initially. It led me to starting to read other books. And for him, noticing and being around, if people are doing linear stuff saying, cool, I'm working, I'm doing this sort of 9 to 5, I'm doing that and loving it, that's fine if it works for you.
Yeah.
But if you're wanting to live a lifestyle, I think, that isn't exactly the 9 to 5, you need to surround yourself with the people who aren't doing it. And the thing for me was noticing my friend George. He studied entrepreneurship at university. He was doing things like creating ebooks, trying to sell them online, doing this type of stuff. And then he said, hey, come along to a hackathon. And that there is when you start to meet. And that quote coming back to you, the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with, was where it sort of started changing that. Because from there, I started hanging with people who were just beyond normal to me, right? At the time, it's like you go to uni, get a job. And then hang out with these other people, it's like, you're absolutely insane. Like the stuff that you were doing, like trying to make a company with very, very small amount of stuff and very small resources, or trying to work, you know, only 4 to 10 hours a week, it seemed insane. And so if most people are looking for that time to shift from, I'm learning about the 9 to 5 or working that, the split would be to find someone who you think or know, or find a community online that is doing the complete opposite or the things that you might want to do, and spend time around those people, because they'll inform you of what works, what doesn't work, and how to do it.
Yeah. Awesome. That was awesome. Cheers, man. We'll get on to the next question, which is, what purchase of $100 or less most positively impacted your life in the last 6 months?
Yeah, there's
what a question.
Yeah, it's an awesome Tim Ferriss question. Paul, you're welcome. I think the key thing for me is a memory foam pillow. It's, you can get them from Harvey Norman. I bought one, maybe just recently, and it was like, that was a game-changing thing. Like, I think a lot of us probably don't prioritize sleep enough. And so that there was a huge, huge part for being able to change that sleep ritual and then actually measuring and tracking improvements in sleep from there.
Yeah. Awesome. Great question. Two favorite or most effective speakers, self-improvement people?
Paul, I think, so the one I would say and by far had the most impact on me in terms of self-improvement is Tim Ferriss. His work around introduction to stoicism, self-improvement physically as well, and any of his books around learning, self-improvement, all of those are pretty, pretty highly regarded. And then I think the second one for me that's been a bit of a shift is Cy Wakeman. She does a lot around HR accountability, and she has a book called No Ego. And that's been a really, really powerful person for me in the most, probably the most recent 6 months in terms of the work that she's been doing.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Great question again there, Paul. We'll have time for one more question before we let Kale go for the evening. Huge thank you to everyone that's tuning in and watching. Really do appreciate it. Give it another minute or so.
Awesome, bro. Yeah, it's been some cool content.
Yeah.
Mother's Day plans.
Mother's Day plans.
So I think a cool one that we're doing is we've got basically the gifts that I sort of give now are ones that are around people will use again. And so I find the gifts that like I usually get the ones that are transient, not that useful. So that memory foam pillow I just talked about, I bought that for my mother. So we've just got that one there. And so she's coming through and we're spending some time golfing and we're going to go do mini golf, coffee, give her a pillow.
That's awesome. Great question, Dan. How's it going, bro? Look, I think that's sort of about wraps it up. Final thoughts. Is there anything that you'd like to share, words of inspiration or a message with our viewers?
Yeah, look, firstly, I think the community that you've built is really sort of pivotal, and I think the way that you're doing the type of work for Maori and Polynesian in particular has been really, really powerful. I think in specifically that community there's not enough of this type of stuff, so I think the first part is to thank you for that, because I think that's a really empowering type of work that you're doing. And then the second one too is that if anyone has any questions or any type of work or things that they're wanting to be able to ask or work on, marketing, health, living, that type of stuff, feel free to shoot me a message. I'm always open and always willing to connect with like-minded people there.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And look, thanks a lot for that, man. Really appreciate it. So what I will do is I'll post all Kale's details on his website, how to get in contact with him. And like you said, like, seriously, that's just an offer. He just made an offer there. So please take him up on it, because I did. And I did a while back. So once again, brother, thank you so much for taking the time out to have a chat. And there's so many great nuggets there that you shared with everyone, and sharing your story and your journey. I look forward to seeing the growth in K&J growth. And just want to say thank you again, bro, and I really do appreciate it, and look forward to catching up soon.
Yeah, for sure, bro. Thank you very much for having me. Talk soon.
You're right. Cheers, brother.
Cheers, bro.
Thanks for lending me your ear. If you got value out of that, please follow, subscribe, and also share this episode, and head over to athleteempire.co.nz, subscribe to our newsletter, and start to be part of this awesome community of athletes who want to be able to not only give back, but start turning their passions outside of sport into a profession and start generating a profit. Now is the time to be your athlete CEO.